Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 29th day of April, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Call. We got a whole lot of news today, some of it even recycled old news that we think we've heard before, but we keep on hearing. For example, we still have an economic meltdown on tap. We'll get to that in a minute. And there have probably been another estimated 5,000 or so immigrants cross the border illegally. Some of them actually caught and then, of course, released. Expect more mayhem, crime, and, of course, disease, too, although that gets lied about even more than the numbers. And we'll get back to that in a bit, too. Unindicted criminals still walk the streets of the D.C. swamp, and of course there are more killings in gun-free killing zones, too, especially when it comes to people who profess belief in the Bible. 7 people were shot in gun-free Baltimore during a Sunday evening cookout. Notes Breitbart, Baltimore, and indeed the whole of Maryland, has some of the most stringent, anti-constitutional, and obviously useless gun control laws in the entire country, including all kinds of bans on guns, magazines, and the like, registration and fingerprint requirements, and of course, the infamous property confiscation called red flag laws. All of which are obviously intended to create more of what we're getting used to seeing. There was another one where you'd expect it as well, in the People's Republic of California, which is increasingly gun-free, except among the criminal population. Several people were shot, one fatally, at a Chabad Jewish synagogue on the Sabbath day. That one probably would have been worse, except for it wasn't completely gun-free. An armed, off-duty Border Patrol agent inside the synagogue returned fire with the shooter, who was soon captured, along with an anti-Semitic manifesto and some of the usual screed. In the Equatorial African country of Burkina Faso, there was another attack on a Christian church as Protestant worshippers were leaving the Sunday services. Islamic terrorists on motorbikes rode up, killed about 5 people, including the pastor, and then rode off. The West African nation says coverage has been struggling with jihadist violence since 2015, and the state of Burkina Faso has now declared a state of emergency. Because while about 30% of the population is Christian, primarily Catholic, Muslims make up more than one half of the total, and jihadist groups now regularly target not only Christian, but also moderate Muslim clerics in the north part of the country, having now killed several hundred people in the latest series of attacks. So as we begin to slow down and take a more in-depth look at some of the major stories today, I do want to point out a bit of good news up front. Well, at least it's one small step. The top Chicago prosecutor, you might know the name, Kim Fox, the woman who decided that Jesse Smollett, kind of like Hillary, was also above the law, has been subpoenaed over her office's decision to not charge Jesse with a whole string of felonies. According to the Chicago Sun-Times, ex-appellate judge Sheila O'Brien, who said that Fox's handling of the Smelly case was, quote, plagued with irregularity, has subpoenaed the not-so-prosecutorial prosecutor over her handling of the case, and the judge is also pushing for the appointment of a federal prosecutor, arguing that the conflicts of interest demonstrated here in this case are, quote, beyond dispute. And she seemed to be upset, too, that Fox, quote, misled the public into believing that Smollett's case was handled like any other prosecution and without influence, unquote. And yeah, I know, it's kind of hard to read that or even listen to it without chortling, isn't it? But like it or not, there are far worse perversions of what was once called the rule of law that even still aren't getting the coverage they deserve from the waste stream, like this one, courtesy of Zero Hedge, which says that the United States tapped its puppet government in Ukraine, and we're talking about the Obama regime here, of course, in order to hurt Trump, help Clinton, and protect the creepy Joe Biden family, including his son. Investigative reporter, and I like to use that term when it's appropriate, John Solomon from The Hill reported that in January of 2016, the Obama White House summoned Ukrainian authorities to Washington to discuss several ongoing matters under the guise of coordinating what it laughably called anti-corruption efforts. The January 2016 gathering, confirmed by a number of participants and contemporaneous memos, brought some of the Ukraine's top corruption prosecutors and investigators, boy, don't you just love hearing those terms in this context, face to face with members of the former regime, including Obama's National Security Council, FBI, Department of State, and Department of Justice. The agenda suggested the purpose was training and coordination, but the truth is, the Ukrainian participants said it didn't take long, during the meetings and afterwards, to realize the American objectives included two politically hot investigations, one that touched Vice President Joe Biden's family, and the other involved a lobbying firm closely linked to then-candidate, now President Trump. Turns out the Obama officials, likely knowing that lobbyist Paul Manafort was about to join President Trump's campaign, they were tapping him after all, and he did in March, were interested in reviving a closed investigation into payments to U.S. figures from Ukraine's pro-Russia party of Regions, which both Paul Manafort and the unindicted co-conspirator who pretty well got completely off the hook, Tony Podesta, did unregistered work for. This according to the former Ukrainian embassy political officer, Andriy Talarzhenko, who said it was definitely, quote, that case that led to the charges against Manafort and the leak to the U.S. media during the 2016 election. But the real smoking gun seems to come from Nazar Kolodnyetsky, Ukraine's chief anti-corruption prosecutor, who told Solomon he saw evidence in the Ukraine of political meddling, are you ready for this, in the U.S. election. No, not by Russia, but by the Obama regime's new puppet state in the Ukraine. The prosecutor said the key evidence against Paul Manafort, a ledger known to Ukrainian authorities since 2014, was suddenly released in May of 2016 by the U.S.-friendly NABU after Manafort was named Trump's campaign chairman. Quote, somebody kept this black ledger secret for 2 years and then showed it to the public and the U.S. media. It was extremely suspicious, said Kolodnyetsky, who specifically instructed NABU not to share what they called the black ledger with the media. Quote, I ordered the detectives to give nothing to the mass media concerning this case. Instead, they had broken my order and published themselves these one or two pages of this black ledger regarding Paul Manafort, he added. For me, it was the first call that something was going wrong and that there is some external influence in this case, and there are some other interests in this case not in the interest of the investigation and a fair trial, unquote. And later on, a court in the Ukraine concluded that NABU's release of the ledger was an illegal attempt to influence the U.S. elections. And you haven't heard much about that from CNN, the WAPO, or Rachel Maddow now, have you? Kostyantin Kulyak, deputy head of the Ukraine Prosecutor's General International Affairs Office, said that the Ukraine also had evidence of other Western figures receiving money from Yanukovych's party, such as former Obama White House counsel Gregory Craig, but that the Americans just weren't interested. Quote, they discussed Manafort. This was all and only what they wanted. Nobody else, said Kulyak. And, of course, another case that raised eyebrows, but not among the press, involved the Bidens, specifically Burisma Holdings, a Ukrainian energy company which was under investigation at the time for improper foreign transfers of money. Burisma allegedly paid then-Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter, more than $3 million in 2014 through 15 as both a board member and a consultant, according to bank records. Others have suggested, well, you know, folks, that kind of money could be called things like a bribe, payoff, or influence money. According to Talarzhenko, U.S. officials in the prior regime told the Ukrainians they would prefer that Kiev drop the probe of Burisma and allow the FBI to take it over. And the reason for that is now a no-brainer. The Ukrainians, though, didn't agree. But then Joe Biden pressured Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko to fire the chief Ukraine prosecutor in March 2016, as Solomon has previously reported, and the Burisma case was transferred to the NABU, the Ukrainian equivalent of the Crooked Comey FBI. It stands for, in case you're curious, the National Anti-Corruption Bureau. Guess where they learned that kind of transparency? Whereupon it was shut down. As Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani tweeted over the weekend, if the media continues to ignore the possible Ukraine DNC conspiracy back in 2016 to find and create damaging information about Trump, Manafort, and the Trump campaign, it will amount to corruption. And for those of us, he said, still open to change, help us and cover it, because you know it's news, unquote. And the rest is almost, but not quite, unreported history. DOJ documents, the story concludes, support Telezhenko's claim that the DOJ reopened its Manafort case as the 2016 election ramped up, including communications between Associate Attorney General Bruce Orr, his crooked wife Nellie, and ex-British spy Christopher Steele. As Solomon writes, it was Nellie Orr and Steele who worked in 2016 for the research firm Fusion GPS that was hired by the Clinton campaign and the DNC to find Russia, Russia, Russia dirt on Trump. Steele wrote the infamous dossier for Fusion that the bought and paid for FBI used to gain a Star Chamber warrant to spy on the Trump campaign, and Nellie Orr admitted to Congress that she routed Russia dirt on Trump from Fusion to the DOJ through her husband during the election. And furthermore, DOJ emails show that Nellie Orr herself, on May 30 of 2016, directly alerted her husband and two DOJ prosecutors specializing in so-called international crimes. I think they covered up more than prosecuted. But they were alerted to the discovery of the Black Ledger documents that led directly to Manafort's prosecution. As Solomon concludes, quote, what is already confirmed by Ukrainians looks a lot more like assertive collusion with a foreign power than anything detailed in the Mueller report. On then next to the invasion, still underway. First via a propaganda headline from the AP over the weekend about how the global migrants' journey, it says, has stalled, yeah sure, in southern Mexico. Dateline Tapachula, thousands fleeing conflict or poverty in places like Nigeria, Cameroon, Bangladesh, Haiti, and Cuba have traveled across oceans, through the jungles and mountains of South America, up through Central America, on a route that, they say, so far ends here. The steamy, crumbling Mexican city of Tapachula near the Guatemalan border. Over 1,500 of them, it says, while away the weeks or months in a park dotted by giant ceiba trees and vines, awaiting exit visas that never seem to come. Full stop. Only 1,500 or so? Folks, there's probably 10 or maybe who knows how many more times than that down there that they're not talking about, but we will in just a second. And good grief, who needs visas anyway if you're planning on illegally entering the United States? And let's not kid anybody. The journey has hardly ended, and they don't seem to ask the important question in this article. How the heck did these migrants get across oceans and through jungles in order to be able to make it to southern Mexico so that they continue a high-profile voyage to El Norte? Yeah, I know. There's a lot more here that they're not telling you than the propaganda that they are. When it comes to propaganda and a clear message for those with eyes to see, it's hard to top the pagan Roman Church and the commie pope himself. First, the headline from Always Believe Communist News, which says Pope Francis donated $500,000 to migrants at the U.S. border. And the money, says Peter's Pence, is specifically meant to aid 75,000 migrants who arrived in Mexico in 2018 as part of no less than six caravans, according to a press release. And they're upset in part because media coverage has been decreasing. Well, folks, it's either that or admit that what they and other communist organizations worldwide are funding is an outright invasion of the United States. So maybe it's understandable. But what your host actually thought was interesting was the fact that several conservative publications did the math. And while your host isn't really that big on things that might be called signs or might just be called coincidences, if people realize they look too convenient, I do find this one more than a bit suspicious, especially given the source and the audience. If you remember the 666 reference in Scripture, in the book of Revelation especially. Why exactly $500,000 for 75,000 invaders? Because when you do the math, that comes out to exactly $6.66, actually $6.66 and .666 of a penny, and so on. So, yeah, I do find it hard to swallow that if they weren't trying to telegraph something, they wouldn't have picked these exact numbers. Here's one more headline. I've seen more of these than I can even begin to count of late. But Border Patrol says Arizona Central is now releasing more thousands of illegal immigrants in Tucson, Arizona, Pima County. And on top of that, the story continues, kind of building on what we talked about last week. Border Patrol officials in El Paso, Texas, have been busing hundreds of migrants each day to Tucson so they can be released there instead of El Paso, which has been struggling under the sheer masses of the invasion in that Texas city. In Mexico, says another headline, not largely discovered by the waste stream yet, over 1,000 migrants have escaped what's called the Siglo 21 detention center, says the Daily Coin, which just happened to have been overloaded to nearly double its capacity, and hundreds of those have now boarded a train headed for guess where? From the Daily Mail, a headline that exclaims the White House will reveal its immigration overhaul plan in, quote, the next couple of weeks, but it's still in the process of figuring out all the details of the sanctuary city proposal. But not to worry, says the British rag, Trump really will send migrants to sanctuary cities like Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco. What I'd like to see in the plan, folks, is how he intends to keep them there. Well, actually, no. I was more or less kidding. What I'd really like to see is Trump step up to the plate and say, you know what, we have a Second Amendment for exactly this kind of reason, and call out the militia. Use his bully pulpit while he still can, and say, you know what, your country's being invaded, it's time Americans stepped up to the plate, we took off their handcuffs and allowed them to do what the point of keeping and bearing arms was anyway, protect your homes, families, and properties against an overwhelming invasion force that's coming in across the borders because Big Brother doesn't want to otherwise allow it to be turned back. And besides, if you really didn't want an invasion, why would you subsidize it to the extent that Big Brother has been doing for so many years? You do get what you pay for, after all. Oh, and one last story on that front. This one's not in the least surprising. Comes from Michael Snyder in his Economic Collapse blog. But the headline is at least a bit humorous when it comes to typical hypocrisy. Wealthy elites, he says, are freaking out as homeless hordes take over upscale West Coast neighborhoods. The elite, he notes, are oh so tolerant of things like the homeless and others until they start showing up in their very own neighborhoods. And even though the waste stream media keeps telling us that the U.S. economy is booming, the number of Americans living on the streets, or non-Americans coming in so they can live on the streets, continues to grow very rapidly. That's particularly true on the far left coast, where more than 500,000 Americans, says Snyder, will sleep on the streets of, well, I'm not going to say our cities. They're no longer our cities, folks. This very evening. And sadly, as economic conditions deteriorate and the invasion keeps on coming, that number is likely to double, triple, or worse. And of course, among the elites, there are any number all in favor of doing something, especially if it's counterproductive, as long as it's not in their backyards. He cites a number of examples, including the frontman Johnny Rotten for the Sex Pistols, a key symbol of the anti-establishment rebellion from the 1970s, but now he too is joining those freaking out because homeless people are making life very difficult for him and his wife in upscale Venice Beach. He told Newsweek's Paula Frelick that the situation in his swanky L.A. neighborhood is so bad, thieves are starting to tear the bars from the windows of his multi-million dollar home, and they're lobbing bricks and setting up unsightly tent cities and littering his beach with syringes. Quote, a couple of weeks ago, I had a problem, said the former punk prince. They came over the gate, put their tent inside, right in front of the front door. It's like the audacity. And if you complain, what are you? Oh, one of the establishment elite? No, I'm a bloke that's worked hard for his money, and I expect to be able to use my own front door, unquote. And he's not happy either about the fact that there's, quote, poo all over the sand. Why, even far left Seattle, the piece ends. And its own Pravda, the Seattle Times, is reporting that 53% of Seattle voters now support a zero-tolerance policy on homeless encampments. And fully 62% of the progressives there believe that the problem's getting worse because the city, quote, wastes money by being inefficient and isn't accountable for how the money is spent. And too many resources are being spent on wrong approaches to the problem. Who could have thought it? Well, suggests Snyder, for a famously progressive city, this is a remarkable shift in public opinion. And basically, folks, your cynical host will suggest that's the official sign that the battle against socialism is lost. Beyond redemption, too late, stick a fork in it. In a way, you could call this, too, a related story, in the sense that one thing people aren't being told is the real cause here. Says Zero Hedge in a story entitled, erroneously, All You Need to Know About the U.S. Measles Outbreak. And here they quote all kinds of statistics from the likes of who? The so-called World Health Organization, the U.S. Centers for Deadly Contamination, and of course public health offices in places like totalitarian New York State and City, Washington, and the People's Republic of California. So you know what's coming. The United States, it begins, has recorded a whopping 695 cases of measles in 22 states, the largest outbreak since public health officials back in 2000 lied and declared that the disease was officially eradicated, somewhat prematurely. And that was pre-invasion from the south, too. Since other, more reliable but less politically correct sources are suggesting that the problem might have to do with new strains of measles being imported by people who aren't quarantined as they once used to be, coming in mass and bringing new diseases with them. Measles only one of many, and almost certainly among the most benign at that. The outbreak has led to fines being imposed in totalitarian cities and the quarantine of over 1,000 people as the outbreak spread across Los Angeles universities, where, they don't bother to tell you, almost everybody really is vaccinated. But in fact, say the latest CDC numbers, the measles cases registered 4 months into 2019 have surpassed the number of cases from the last decade. And guess what? Yeah, I telegraphed this one, didn't I? A large source of the outbreak are foreign travelers. Now, that's about as close as they get to saying illegal invaders from the south, too. But on Monday, the CDC released the latest updated figures on the number of cases recorded so far this year, and here they claim are key facts. Yeah, take them with a big grain of salt. Public health officials, sick, blame the resurgence of measles on the spread of misinformation about vaccines. Can you believe it, folks? There are people that don't worship at the altar of the big pharma companies. And some don't drink the Kool-Aid or take the poke. And social networks, it says, have now had to resort to censorship to prevent the spread, no, not of the so-called epidemic, but of people talking about it. Can you believe it, folks? A vocal group of parents, it says, actually opposes vaccines, believing that some of the ingredients in them can cause autism. And it doesn't say it here, but a whole bunch of other stuff, too. Although it does say that in the warnings in the fine print. If you've listened here, you know about the fines being issued by the totalitarian People's Republic of de Blasio's New York City, where Octung, My Body, My Choice, doesn't apply to being injected against your will, or paying huge, whopping fines if you still think you're a free person. I'm going to skip most of the rest of this because it's absolute, well, BS, folks. Other than when you get down to the point where it says so-called lawmakers on the left coast from California to Oregon and Washington are considering bills to eliminate all kinds of exemptions that allowed unvaccinated children to get indoctrinated in the public cesspools. The right answer there is to say good riddance and don't put them in there anyway, because they're almost certain to catch something a lot deadlier than measles. And they've even changed the numbers when it comes to the bogus claim of so-called herd immunity. No, it's not enough, as they once said, to get 80% of a population vaccinated in order to get their desired results. Now it has to be, oh, maybe 95% of the population. Which does beg the question that the article doesn't ask, but any decent engineer or much less statistician would have to. If vaccines are so effective, and the hysterical have gotten theirs, so they're safe. Why does the herd worry about having everybody else vaccinated anyway? Aren't you immune now? And I did note that the commenters among Zero Hedge's pretty well-educated audience noted, hey, how many people have died from measles? Why don't they compare the numbers to SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, adverse drug reactions, or even the flu, or even people that got the flu after being vaccinated? None of this justifies the current hysteria created by the media. Oh, of course, nor does it justify, your host notes, the censorship of those encouraging an attack of the disease of common sense in response to all of this. Well, folks, we don't have time to talk about all the signs indicating the next epic collapse is right at hand, but we do have time to at least mention a bit of good news concerning the Gillette ad that was called one of the most hated ads in internet history, which urged men to shave their toxic masculinity, notes Paul Joseph Watson, while blaming an entire gender for the actions of a small percentage of sexual abusers. Well, as it turns out, parent company Procter & Gamble reported better-than-expected profits in every area, except male grooming products dominated by Gillette. Draw your own conclusions, while Big Brother and his public-private partners still allow you to. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.